Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times and Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst. It's natural to look back at this time of year. How was 2017 for you? What were the highs and the lows? Here are the winners and losers from the season so far, in our eyes at least. I'll begin by stating the obvious. Man City, team of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to say something a bit different about Manchester City. It's really difficult to, and actually, you know, they're so fabulous to watch that I don't really have any problems praising them. I mean, the other contenders for this crown, I suppose, would be Burnley, and we admire Burnley because, you know, they're a team that's maximised absolutely everything they've got. But I actually think Manchester City are doing that as well. The performances that Guardiola is getting out of ordinary players is incredible. You look at the back four at the weekend, it had Mangala, it had Fabian Delph, who's somehow become a fantastic left back. And that's before you start to talk about the top players he's got, Kevin De Bruyne, Gabriel Jesus, David Silva, the level of performance he's getting from then. So it has to be City. I know there's a rush to try and say they're the best team in the world ever, and I think that's a bit too early. But I think what we can say is that, you know, no team in one half of a Premier League season has done what they've done, and not just the results are achievement, but they're so memorable to watch as well.
How do they compare to the Arsenal Invincibles?
It's a good comparison. Well, if you ask me at the end of the season, it would probably be fairer to answer it then. What I will say is that, in the words of Troy Deeney, the Invincibles had the cojones to go the whole season. They proved that unbeaten. When they weren't playing well, they had that resolve and grit and fortitude to get the results. We don't yet know how Manchester City will react when the pressure starts to build. And the pressure will build on them to be the Invincibles the longer this run goes on unbeaten. But in terms of the football they're producing, I think it is the best I've seen in the Premier League era. I think it is better even. And Manchester United fans won't like hearing it, but I think the quality of the football is better than the best Manchester United teams I can remember. And they had some unbelievable players. But the fluidity of it is remarkable to watch. We don't know how good they are defensively. Yeah. They've not been tested.
The only thing, and I agree up to a point, I think maybe the difference is that Manchester United team and that Arsenal team produced football of the highest class against each other.
Yes.
Against teams who were also of the highest class. Yeah. And one of my questions about Man City, and it's certainly not their fault, it's the rest of the Premier League's fault, they haven't had to do that against, for me, a really, really top opposition yet.
Well, they're battering everyone. They're battering all the top six rivals, aren't they? They are. I've never seen a team swarm all over the opposition, apart from Pep's Barcelona, of course, in quite the same way. You can't get the ball off of them, and that is the best attack is the best form of defence. We know that. And Pep has taken that to sort of an extreme level. They are so far ahead of the rest. You're right. At least those famous Arsenal and Manchester United sides were at loggerheads. They were very even Stevens, the top two. Now we've got a big six, but in truth, it's one, and the other five are all quite evenly matched. It's just the improvement of City that's staggering, because they were pretty poor for long periods last season. I sat here and said, at the end of last season, Guardiola has had a nightmare season. I said, he's had a mare, because he's underachieved massively. But what he's done, he's recognised all the mistakes he made, and he's not made them again.
Yeah, talking about a new contract for him. Are we talking about a dynasty here?
Yes, we could be. I mean, he's now very, very happy in his own skin. You can see that. I noticed that in the press conference on Saturday. And I think he's a man that, you know, previous clubs has burnt himself out, has has become not unhappy, but jobs have become intolerable. If it's as easy for him, I'm not saying it's easy what he's done, but if he's as superior in England in future years as he has been this year, why wouldn't he stay? Why wouldn't he stay, enjoy himself, see how far he can push his team, focus more on the Champions League? He's a young man. He gets paid more than any manager in history. And as I say, if he's going to find it as pleasurable as he's finding life at the moment, then absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Manager of the season so far, Adrian, Sean Dyche?
No, it's Pep Guardiola, isn't it? Because he's improved the players, I mean, massively. And he's not making the mistakes that he did last year. So it has to be Guardiola. But yeah, Sean Dyche is rather up, isn't he? I mean, he's, like Jonathan said, he's maximising his group, punching well above their weight, Burnley. It is unbelievable, really, that they've got this many points so far, given how few goals they're scoring. Yeah. It's testament to the organisation, the defensive discipline he's instilled. And what I love about Burnley is that when someone drops out, the next guy comes in and it's seamless. And it's seamless because he's drilled them day in, day out. Morning, not morning and afternoon. I'm sure they only do mornings, but I'm sure he's drilled them blooming hard in those mornings. And it's what I love about Burnley is that they're not intimidated by the big guns. And I tell you what, too many teams are in the Premier League. Too many teams are beaten before they've even kicked off, but not Burnley. They'll take the fight to you. Not always in an attacking sense, but they will physically try and match, you know, beat you up and be aggressive. Too many of the teams of their stature are passive, and I don't like that.
Mm. I think that people jump to conclusions about Sean Dyche just based on the visual evidence of, you know, basically a nightclub bouncer. Very intelligent, incisive guy.
Yeah.
With views away from football as well. Yeah. How have you found him, Johnny?
Yeah, I would echo that. And I, funnily enough, I wonder with the image whether he maybe knows it's a slight advantage because people still underestimate him. Because he is intelligent enough to be aware of how that perception is. And you know, underestimate Sean Dyche at your peril. What Adrian was talking about, the players that come into their team when someone's out, that's a product of culture. That's somebody that's built not just a football club, but a culture around that club that means that, you know, it's a group, it's not a first team, it's got a set of values, it's got a pattern of playing that if you take one part out, another part can come in. And I don't think it's appreciated how difficult that is to achieve at any level, but let alone at the Premier League.
I'll ask you a quick question. Yeah. If he was to get, let's say, Man United job, what sort of football do you think he would produce for Manchester United? Because I can't be sure.
That is a great question, and I can't see it being anything radically different to the football he produces right now. But one might say that's the football Jose Mourinho produces, really. Sean Dyche is a pragmatist above all else. I think there's the two schools of management are actually idealists and pragmatists, and then you can divide up how they want to play after that. But Sean is a pragmatist who would take the resources that he had and ultimately would look to try and, you know, score goals in the most efficient way and defend, which isn't really what Guardiola would do.
How would he go down at Arsenal?
Well, probably not brilliantly in terms of if he was appointed. I just think that the fans would assume the type of football would change. I'd love to see him in charge of a more talented group of players. Because, do you know what, if there's one thing Arsenal need is a bit of Sean Dyche's of coaching.
Arsenal fans were up for Simeone, weren't they? I
just think it's probably too far removed. Yeah. I think Arsenal need a disciplinarian. I think they need a hard man to replace Arsene Wenger when he chooses to go, and they need someone that will really get that off the ball work nailed. And I guess Sean Dyche, you would back him to do that, wouldn't you? But the worry would be for Arsenal fans, would he inhibit or restrict the attacking flair, which they've become used to? And, you know, say what you like about Arsenal, they are good to watch a lot of the time. Not all of the time, unfortunately, but most of the time they're still pretty attractive to watch.
The question for me would be, could he, but that culture I talked about, imposing that at a really big club is difficult. Yeah. Easier at a small group.
The respect of the players is the key thing here. I think he would be able to gain the respect of players at a top six club. But you can't guarantee it. I was at Arsenal when Bruce Rioch was there. He came in and it was just just a step too far, and some of the big guns, the superstar players, they just didn't want to take to him, and then it's a recipe for disaster.
We're talking about superstar players. Who's your player of the season so far? I'll throw in a name.
Yeah.
Wilfried Zaha. Palace unbeaten since he came back, virtually.
Yeah.
A different type of footballer, a street footballer, learns to manipulate the ball, you know, playing cage football. I think if you judge someone on making an impact at a club and being the key figure for that football club, Zaha has had a fantastic 6 months.
Yeah, I think there's a case for saying Zaha is the most important player to a club in the Premier League. There are other talismen, but it's hard to think of Palace having any chance of surviving without Zaha, or even being Crystal Palace without Zaha. Although they might have to confront that in the summer, because you know the way he's going, there'll be interest in him. Is he the player of the Premier League? I have to kind of go back to City, and it is hard to do the counter argument to Kevin De Bruyne, who's just at a level which you know is challenging us as writers to describe his performances. I mean, you know, Pep at the weekend had moved on from saying he's brilliant for the team to saying he's a fantastic for the whole institution. You know, we're trying to move to how significant this footballer is, and what a player to watch. But great as he is, I think if you took De Bruyne out of the City team, it would have less impact on that team than taking Zaha out of Crystal Palace.
Yeah, Zaha's ready for a bigger club. He wasn't when he joined Manchester United, but he's developed and he's hitting his straps now, blimey. Yeah. There's not many players like him. I'd love to see him at Arsenal, I've got to say. I think he could be, if Alexis Sanchez leaves, he would be someone capable of filling his shoes. I think he'd be sensational at Emirates Stadium. We've not mentioned Mo Salah.
That's 20 goals before Christmas, this is ridiculous. Absolutely.
Not even a striker. Not a striker. He's a right-sided forward. Yeah. Who's actually not blessed with what I would call the greatest all-round game. He's not got many tricks.
No.
He's basically quick, nippy. He can chop the ball. You know, he can beat a player, but he's not particularly graceful in the way he does it. He's just very direct. And he's got that in product. Fabulous. And, yeah, for Liverpool, he's their talisman, isn't he? I mean, the quality of the goals he's scoring is frightening.
Incredible intelligence. I think he makes the very difficult look very easy. Yeah. The way times are run. He just always seems to be running through with the ball.
He reminds me. Obviously, the comparisons have been made with Robin, clearly. Yeah. And you understand why. Direct. Comes onto his left foot, scores. But this might sound ridiculous. He reminds me of Messi. Like when he's scampering around the box with the ball at his feet, looking for that little bit of space to fire his shots away, it's like a cross between Messi and Robin. And Liverpool fans must be so excited to come and see him every week. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Performance of the campaign so far. I'll throw in what was probably a false dawn. Spurs and Real Madrid. That was a night which almost enticed you to think, hang on, they might do something.
I think that's a great shout. It was, we want Spurs to be the team they showed that night. And,
do we?
Well, maybe you don't. As a neutral, I do. And, I mean, they can be, they can be intoxicating with the youth and the sort of, you know, the I guess the domestic element to it, the band of brothers. I'm not going to choose that only because I wasn't there. And I find it hard to really sort of appreciate games fully unless I'm there, I have to say. My choice would actually be West Ham versus Chelsea, which is so recently, which was a very different type of game, being a West Ham score early, very good goal, sort of 6 minute, I think. And then you know what the script's going to be. They're going to have to encamp and they're going to have to withstand and they're going to have to work like they haven't before. And you look at what was riding on that game. I think their season was there and then. They don't win that game. They don't start to turn it around. It becomes too late for them. They haven't worked hard for the previous manager. They're a group of players that you wonder if they're too old or incapable of doing what they then go on and do. And they produced such one of those heroic sort of performances of willpower, but with quality.
And it energised David Moyes, didn't it?
It energised Moyes. And that could well be a moment that changes a whole club season, which is, as we've seen with Spurs, unfortunately, that was a false dawn and it hasn't really affected the in a positive way the rest of the campaign. Yeah.
Well, well,
yeah, I think they're really good shouts. Arsenal, I thought in the North London derby, put in a phenomenal performance to beat Spurs. It was pretty flawless in terms of their on and off the ball work. Great drive. That was the blueprint really for Arsenal. I think City at Old Trafford, they took the mickey out of Manchester United. Really, I mean, it was so. This was Man United conceded one goal and the whole season at Old Trafford. This was where their season was on the line. Yeah. And City just rocked up and just blew them away. It like didn't even look like they were playing that well, but it was so classy. So and the best individual performance, David De Gea. That was just epic. Yeah. It was a monster performance from David De Gea. So you won't see a better. I'm telling you now, we won't see a better individual performance than that.
You were at that game.
Yeah.
A late game, which is a nightmare for all of us, with doing like running copy for a game. Was that the game where you thought, I really wish I didn't have to write this piece, I could just watch it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I mean, I always do watch games back, but you have to, you know, when you get home. But I haven't already seen it. I was really looking forward to seeing it again. You know, was that double save quite as good as I thought? It was as good as you thought, you know. It was a game that I wished had stopped at 75 minutes because far too much was happening to get a running piece of match report in. So thankfully there weren't any sort of final twists, but it was both brilliant but challenging to work at.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to upset you now. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Biggest disappointment as a team this season, Arsenal. They drive me mad because you look at them and you think, I want them to succeed. I've got such respect for Arsene Wenger, and yet it's the same old, same old.
You're out of order, aren't you? I mean, how you can put Arsenal above Everton? I mean, I don't know. But do you know what? I don't think you'd get that many Arsenal fans genuinely agreeing with you, because I think Arsenal are where a lot of Arsenal fans thought they would be at this stage of the season. I don't think the expectations this year were particularly high, unfortunately. I think most Gunners supporters recognised that City would be ahead of them. I think they accepted that Chelsea and United probably would be, maybe even Spurs as well. It is, unfortunately, the feeling that is there at the moment. I think they're where they should be. I would say, actually, and I know that you'll think I'm just saying this for the sake of it, but Spurs have been a big disappointment. I mean, given the heights they hit last year, the brilliant performances where they went to the big teams, home and away, and were so strong, so impressive. They're a shadow of that team.
I would actually choose Spurs for that. For that reason, they were 8 points ahead of Manchester City last year, and now they're 21 behind. Now, I know that's partly because Man City are having a great season, but you know they were. This was supposed to be the season that after a couple of second places, or you know, normal second place in 2015-16, this was going to be the season that they had a chance. Because we know this could be a moment in time for Spurs. The players could go, the manager could go at some point, and this could be as good as it gets. And they have fallen a long way short. Dele Alli in particular, but he's not the only one falling short. It would have been Everton until a few weeks ago, though. Yeah. You know, having what they spent in the summer and the depths they sank to. But they look like a much different team now.
Because when Sam Allardyce was appointed, quite a few people, myself included, and I suspect you were the same, Johnny, went, that's not going to fit.
Yeah, well, I was astonished they didn't try and get Sean Dyche. I just thought he was the obvious fit, the most obvious of obvious fits, but they never just weren't had no interest, apparently. So, well, maybe minor interest. Look, credit him. I mean, he's just organised. He's not done anything amazing, has he? He's just galvanised the group. He's got them feeling better about themselves, got the defence sorted. He's given Wayne Rooney the confidence to go out there and express himself. I mean, the stats on Rooney are crazy, aren't they? He's Europe's most lethal marksman. I mean, but the numbers.
Same number of goals as Kane, isn't it? Or thereabouts?
Yeah, he's got 9 goals. Same, I think, as Lukaku, but I think Morata. His conversion rate is the best in Europe. Yeah. He has never got anywhere near scoring. I think from open play, the best year he's had in terms of converting chances open play was like 15%. Yeah. So like 16%. He's got 33% of the chances he gets an open play, he's scoring. How much of that is to do with Big Sam?
Is that one from his own half counted as a chance?
Yeah, even that does, yeah, bonus chance. I mean, what a goal that was.
I keep waiting for the referee to get an assist on that one with a little flick.
Yeah, I still think Everton need a lot of new bodies. It's an ageing defence, and I think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done on the team, which was so unbalanced. But he's done a great job, hasn't he, so far?
Yeah. A lot of activity in January. Yeah. What do you think will be the most significant transfer? I'll throw mine in the mix. I think Virgil van Dijk is going to end up at Manchester City.
Wow. Well, that would have huge repercussions, obviously, for Liverpool, who've been waiting for him with open arms and probably the shirts hanging there ready for him. You may be right, and money may talk. I think that should be a shame because, you know, he's a lovely footballer to watch. I'm actually not sure if he's a really great defender, but he's a really superb footballer, especially for a man of his size. And you want to see him play. And will he play at City? I don't know. I mean, Otamendi's having such an incredible season that it'd be hard to take him out of the team. And Stones represents everything Guardiola wants. So would he play all the time? But I do think if it comes down to a shootout financially, then he will go to Man City over Liverpool. Alexis Sanchez, you've got thoughts about that, but that is another transfer that could happen that would have knock-on ripple effects everywhere.
Well, if he does go, Alexis Sanchez, do you think he'll be overseas or to City?
To City, I thought.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But I think what might have changed at City, having wanted him for the best part of a year, is actually, would that inhibit the development of Sterling, Sané, even Foden, if you throw in the mix? Mm. And is Guardiola far enough ahead now that he maybe doesn't need Sanchez?
In Guardiola, I wouldn't be going for him. And then, just because I don't think he needs him.
Is he good enough? Would he actually get in the team?
No, not in this season's form, no. And then the way he plays, holding on to the ball. Look, he's a brilliant footballer. Let's get it right. But the way City are so incisive, so quick, so purposeful when they do fly forward, I don't know where Alexis fits in. I just don't know where he would play. It would have to be a different system, I think.
Mm. Because if Guardiola has got reservations about Aguero's, let's say, single-minded devotion the way he wants to play and not maybe the team, mm-hmm. I'd have thought the same would apply to Sanchez.
I don't think it's a natural fit. I personally would hope if Arsenal do sell him, they sell him maybe to PSG or somebody like that, rather than strengthening a Premier League rival. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen in January? I mean, there's talk of Theo Walcott maybe leaving. I mean, Everton are interested, aren't they? Maybe West Ham. Yeah, that would be a big move. Theo, for me, is still a real player to be reckoned with when he's on his game. I saw him recently against a terrible Bartek Borisov team that had clearly partied too hard after winning their title. They were all for the Emirates. But his attitude was spot on, and he was excellent that night. And it was just a little reminder that he's got something to offer somebody. I just feel it might not be Arsenal long term. Yeah.
Any other big ones coming through, you think?
Well, the other one I'm looking at, and you know, a bit of Leicester bias here, but one of my favourite players in the whole league, Riyad Mahrez, who, you know, in the last sort of couple of weeks, he's got a new agent. He's done his first interview in a newspaper all of a sudden.
Good haircut
in a year, and he's
well, he's good. It's a good haircut. I'm not sure about good. Different haircut.
Different. I mean, he's a man that, you know, for whatever reason, wants to be noticed ahead of a January transfer window.
But come and get me, please.
yeah. You know.
So where's he going to end up?
Well, I think he's a natural fit, actually, at Arsenal. Although Zaha might be a better option with the English element to it. I've seen him as a Wenger player for a long time, but I wonder if it's going to be Chelsea, because the agent that he's chosen has got some quite good connections there, and it's patently obvious that Conte's unhappy and is going to push for more transfers. So I suspect it'll be one of the London clubs.
The Chelsea theme to this part, biggest flop of the season as a player. Yeah. What about Bakayoko?
Well, yeah, he hasn't been great, has he?
He's got such natural gifts. You look at him, he's a massive unit, and you think, this guy can play.
Fabulous, really, for Monaco. I thought he was outstanding.
But that was one season.
I could totally understand why they went for him. But he hasn't lived up to the hype. He hasn't dominated games in the way that he should for a player of his sort of calibre and size. has he been the flop of the season? I think that's probably, he's probably in the top five. Mm. I don't know if I'd put him at the top. I mean, Davy Klaassen. I mean, he wasn't cheap, was he?
27 million.
Not done a great deal, has he, since signing for Everton? You've got to say that Dele Alli, and even though it's not a new signing, we all expected him to probably have double figure goals by now at least. And he's just disappeared, has he, in games? Yeah. And we saw the nasty side of him come out of Manchester City. So, there's a few candidates for flop of the year.
I'd say you have to throw in Renato Sanches. And I feel, he's a young man and don't want to sort of take the mickey out of him too much. But when you're being substituted after passing the ball straight to an advertising hoarding at half time for a relegation threatened club and you cost 40 million for Bayern Munich, then something's gone wrong.
Yeah, they'll send him back, won't they?
I think they will if they can, but there's a suggestion Bayern will exercise the right not to take him back, which tells you everything.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. What about other biggest turn-offs so far? Again, I'll throw a bit of a grenade in. Jose Mourinho and his mind games. That is so...
Well, it's so predictable, isn't it? Yeah, it is boring, isn't it? Yeah. I just don't care.
And it's not that effective, is it?
I don't care or listen. Yeah, it doesn't affect Man City anymore. They just, as we saw in that derby game, they just go out and play. Yeah, no, that is a turn-off. For me, it would be something I touched on before. It's the negativity of the sides in the bottom half of the table. That's the biggest drawback for me in the Premier League this year. There are too many games where the opposition know they're beaten before ball's been kicked. They don't even try and win. And that depresses me a little bit. And it makes for a lot of boring games, unfortunately. And I love the Premier League. The Premier League's brilliant. But it is in danger of becoming... The gap is in danger of becoming too much. That's why I've loved Watford under Silver, even though they've had a bit of hit and miss lately. At least they've tried to go out there and attack teams and take it to them. Burnley, to some degree, have done that. Leicester have done it of late. They would take the fight to teams. Too many sides are just setting up to keep the score down, and that's boring.
Mm. Let's finish this by metaphorically putting the tin helmets on. Mm-hmm. Top four, bottom three. I'll kick off the top four. What my perception would be, which would be City, United, Liverpool, Chelsea. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I was wondering whether Liverpool will be third or fourth, what order they're going to be in. I suspect Chelsea may add to their firepower and finish third, but I wouldn't quibble with that top four at all. Do you want the bottom?
Well, we'll do that in a minute.
Right, okay. Give me another minute.
Yeah. I think it will go. I think it'll be really close. I don't think there's a great deal between the rest.
Yeah.
City are going to win it, obviously. I would actually put Chelsea in second place. I still think they might be the second best team. I still think Man United, even though they've improved, aren't as good as maybe some people that are making them out to be. I'd put United in third. And then I'd genuinely feel that it would be like just one or two points in it between Liverpool, Arsenal and Spurs. But on the basis of Liverpool's firepower this year and Arsenal, the fact that Arsenal are so lethargic away from home, I would have to put them just ahead of the Gunners, and that hurts me to say it. But yeah, Arsenal need to buck their ideas up on their travels, otherwise they've got no chance of the top four. So based on what we've seen so far, I'd have to say Liverpool in fourth.
OK. So I'll lead with my head on this one then. Going down, Stoke, Brighton, Swansea.
Well, you've helped me make up my mind. Even now, I'm trying to turn it over, and I'm only just going to do it to be slightly different because I agree with two of your selections. I think Swansea, sadly, are gone.
I hope they keep Paul Clement.
So do I. Yeah, I feel sorry for him. I think he's not been particularly well served in the transfer window.
No. They cut his legs off because they sold all the goals, and even Jack Cork. They sold him just for £7 million, just to get £7 million in, which is nonsense.
Yeah, I know. And expect him to take a team that was already struggling and make it somewhere better with that.
Expecting Tammy Abraham, his first season in the top flight to score them the goals.
He's not going to replace
asking too
Llorente,
much.
Is he? So I think they're gone. I agree about Stoke, actually, because they just look like a side that's come to the end of a cycle with a manager. I quite admire some of the things Mark Hughes has done lot of things he's done as a manager and the way his teams play, but they do look like they've run out of ideas, that they've lost a really good generation of players. The John Walters, maybe Shawcross is too old. That backbone that kept them in the league, replaced them with, I'm not sure what, not sure what quality and character some of the players have come in. They've lost the ability to defend well. They don't seem to have enough energy. So a lot, and I think they will also stick with Hughes, which might just mean they run out of time to survive. And the third one, I think I'm going to go for Bournemouth. Brighton are in danger, no doubt about it. Newcastle are in danger, two clubs that came up. But I think Bournemouth, and I feel for Eddie Howe, I know what he's tried to do. He's wanting to put that club to the next level. But I just feel in doing so, he might have diluted the blend that he had that served them so well. I look at them, they seem to change their team all the time. And they don't have enough resilience about them.
I'll tell you what the problem is with Bournemouth. They're too easy to play against.
Yeah, too easy.
They're not defensively resolute enough.
And they've lost the hard work, haven't they? They used to press really hard.
They've lost that edge. I don't know what you can put that down to. I mean, you talk about flops this season. Jermaine Defoe, I guess, has to be considered as one. I mean, all the goals he's scored.
Mind you, I saw him score a worldie at Crystal Palace.
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, it was a sensational goal, but he hasn't scored very many goals. I would have Bournemouth in there, actually. That's a good call. I'd have for sure Swansea, but I agree with everything you said about them. I probably would have had Huddersfield up until recently, but that win at Watford was a show of intent, and it maybe told me that David Wagner is prepared to change his tactics and his style, because he was being too defensive. Yeah. He was my criticism of the bottom half teams. Huddersfield were in my thoughts there, but I think he's seen the light, and because of that, I think Huddersfield will be okay. I will chuck Brighton in because I don't think they will score enough goals, and unfortunately, the pressure to keep clean sheets might just be too much for them in the second half of the season, because they don't have a huge squad. And when injuries hit Brighton, I think it will hurt them more than a lot of other clubs. So, it'd be Brighton, Swansea and Bournemouth.
Well, a word of consolation. We've been wrong before and we probably will be again. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.